episode 3 of the Bonfire Podcast, and we're here on the road already in Riyadh for PFL Battle of the Giants, a huge event. Hoping to do more of these kind of fight week on the ground type podcasts and stuff, and have a great first in-person guest for the podcast, and Dan Hardy. Dan, you'll be calling the fights, of course, on Saturday. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. I've got to say, the Bonfire name, that's brilliant. That's a great name for a podcast.
Yeah, thank you. We were debating a few others. Some of the other names people threw at me, they're like, Word is Bond. Like, Word is Bond was another one. Bonafide was one I was debating, but I like the Bonfire.
Isn't
I
think that was an adaptable name.
Exactly.
Yeah, Bonfire works.
There's a few, yeah, man. And it's tricky. I mean, you've been in the podcast game, you've done this stuff. I'm getting the guests, just keeping the consistent schedule. It's a challenge, right?
That is the challenge is consistency. Yeah, especially when you're as busy as you are. I mean, you've just landed. I landed yesterday, and like, yeah, I'm the same. Like, I need to get my YouTube channel back up and running. I'm just so busy. It's insane.
Yeah. I guess going into that part of it, like the YouTube channel and stuff, what were you finding was, besides the consistency, like the most challenging part? Is it finding the content? Is it competing with everyone who seems to be wanting to get into the space? Now, I feel like I'm so late into the game. Like, I remember John Morgan, my former colleague at MMA Junkie, he tried to get me to start one in like 2014 when we were drunk in Manchester waiting for that Michael Bisping, Dan Henderson card, because we were staying up all hours of the night. I think that was 2017. Maybe we should have started it then, but here we are now.
Yeah, look, it's the same thing. Consistency is the problem. Mm-hmm. Consistency. And the thing is as well, because I have the Raptors and we set like a real high standard of production for the channel when we first started. And now they're off doing loads of different things and I'm off doing things. So to go back to now filming it on my phone and uploading it myself, I'm like, I'm just a bit precious about it, but I've just kind of got to draw a line under it and keep going. And the other thing as well is I'm going to be really specific with the fights that I'm going to break down from now on, because mm-hmm. previously I was just trying to do main events for every event, and I'm just going to do the ones that I'm interested in now. So less shows, but you know, more consistency, hopefully.
Yeah, quality over quantity, there I guess, go, is yeah. that's what they call it. So when did you get in?
I got in yesterday at 1 p.m. Is I went straight to the Ministry of Sport, mm-hmm. the bid for the World Cup 2034, and then, tried to get some sleep last night.
Yeah, I got here about 2 a.m., so like 10 hours ago or so at this point. It's a long journey from Toronto, but this is my third time doing this. This is your first time here?
This is my third time as well. I did the Ngannou Fury fight, and then I did the Champs v Champs card.
Right. But
this is the first time I've flown from New York. Normally I fly from London, and it's a much easier shot. New York's a mission.
Yeah. And obviously, this is kind of, I think this is going to be a place we're going to be coming to a lot more often in the next however many years. It seems like they're going all in on every single sport. This is obviously huge for PFL and everything. I guess we could talk a little bit about this card, you know, going into it. Start at the main event, you know, Francis Ngannou finally coming back to MMA. We've been waiting for this. I asked Peter Murray this question like when we spoke a few minutes ago. Do you think this is more intriguing now because he did the boxing, because he got knocked out, than it would have been if he just went straight from the UFC and came and fought here right away?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think people's expectations would have been set if he stepped out of the UFC and straight into the PFL and he'd have fought, you know, sometime in the next 6 months. I think people would have been like, oh yeah, Francis in a different cage, in different gloves, against different opponents. It would have been cool, but he's been on this whole journey since then, you know, like, the attention that he got from vacating his belt and leaving the UFC to, you know, signing with the PFL and then fighting Tyson Fury. And, you know, even if that fight had gone, say, the Anthony Joshua way, mm-hmm. I still think it would have added the intrigue that he just stepped out of the sport for a minute and back in. But like, I was here for the Fury fight. It was wild. I mean, the whole event was crazy. And then as the fight's going on, I'm standing next to Carl Frampton and we're just both amazed. Like, it was a very, very unusual event. I mean, mm-hmm. And for him to have that kind of success that he did, and then to build the next fight with Joshua, it kept him in a different spotlight for a number of months that he wouldn't have had if he'd have just gone UFC to PFL. You know, that WBC ranking that he got, you know, even though he didn't win a fight, it put a lot of limelight on him. And I also think, you know, the time that he spent in the boots with the big gloves, he's going to have refined his boxing. So I'm interested to see how that affects his game in MMA when he's got the small gloves on.
Yeah, I asked him, Francis, that when we spoke last week. I was like, is there like a re-adaptation that you have to do? And he's like, no, all the adapting was to boxing. Like, this is home. This is where I feel most comfortable. But, you know, like, he had that big knee surgery after the Ciryl Gane fight too. We haven't seen him defend a takedown or take a leg kick. I don't know how much of that he'll be doing against Hendon Ferreira. But he said he feels very confident in it all. But I guess maybe the biggest question around him is the mental side, right? Like, this, his child passes away tragically, 15 months old. He gets knocked out for the first time in combat sports, his last fight. So I don't know, if you could try to put yourself in his shoes, what do you think it's like to try to come back from all that?
I mean, as far as losing his son, I can't even begin to imagine. I can't picture the grief that he would be going through, mm-hmm. and how he would recover himself from that. It's something that I've never been in that situation, and I can't imagine how I would cope with it. Getting knocked out is one of those things in sport, right? You know, it happened to me against Condit, and you just kind of go, well, you know, if I've landed enough knockout punches, I'm going to take one at some point. And Ngannou, you know, he was in a different sport. He was against an elite level boxer, and like Anthony Joshua had the fortune of watching him for rounds against Tyson Fury. You know, we went back to basics and he looked fantastic. Yeah. And I don't think it really affected Ngannou as a brand in any way. So I don't necessarily think it will affect him as a fighter in any way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What I will say though is I think the time that he's spent in boxing will make him a better MMA fighter. Like what I find when people go from MMA to boxing, and Clay Collard's a good example of this. Mm. During the pandemic, he spent, as you know, he kind of spent a lot of time boxing, spent a lot of time focused on, you know, the fights that he could get because MMA wasn't a thing. And it allows people to manage range better. They are able to step into range to land punches, but not crowd themselves and go into a clinch. And that's going to be really, really valuable for him in this fight, because I would say that he needs to be close to Hennen Fajeda to get inside his reach. Mm. But I don't know if he wants to waste too much energy grappling with him. I think we will see some grappling and wrestling out of Ngannou, but I also think Fajeda's huge. He's a sizable individual. Just to take him down and control him is going to be a massive amount of energy expended. Yeah. So, you know, I think Ngannou being able to stay in the pocket and box is going to be really useful for him in this fight particularly, and that would give me confidence if I was him.
Yeah. Now that we're here a couple of days away, was Hennen Ferreira the right choice for the opponent here, you think? Like, it all kind of lined up. I know, you know, he obviously earned it with the season and then beating Ryan Bader, so that's undeniable, like, that part of actually getting it. But, you know, some of the other names that were floating out there, Fabricio Werdum, Junior Dos Santos, things like that, do you think this is the best choice, ultimately?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The other names that you mentioned, and no disrespect to those guys, they're great heavyweights, mm-hmm. but their peak of their career has passed. And I still very much feel like Hennen Fajeda's peak is in front of him. Mm. And, you know, we saw him before he was at American Top Team. His move to American Top Team's completely changed his game. Not only is grappling is better, his takedown defense, his ability to scramble safely, but it's given him confidence in his striking as well. Mm-hmm. Like, when you saw him against Goltsov or Bader, he's waiting there. He's, like, tempting them to throw first so he can counter. That shows a lot of confidence in the striking ability. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to bode really well for him against Ngannou, who's been out of MMA for a while, and he knows he can knock people out with a single punch. So he might be tempted just to rev the engine a bit too soon. And I think Hennen Fajeda, this might be his coming out party. And it might be at the expense of Francis, unfortunately for him. But Hennen Fajeda, I would put him in there on November 16th at Madison Square Garden against any three of those heavyweights. And I think he has a really, really good chance of beating all of them.
Okay, so that's like kind of one of the main things I wanted to ask you about today. Like, you heard Tom Aspinall's comments, I'm sure, saying, you know, my teammate took him out, Hennen Ferreira out easily. He's saying he's not even top 10. Just kind of the opinions of everyone. And I do think Hennen's very good, but like the winner of this fight, how do we put them in context with like the best heavyweights in the world, with Tom out there, with the winner of Jones and Stipe? You know, maybe they do us a favor and retire after, but like, just say everyone's active and competing. How do we put the winner of this fight in appropriate context?
That is a real challenge, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not something that I would like to be trying to do myself. I just feel like we've got, you know, we know that Francis is an elite level heavyweight, and I very much feel like Hennen is, even though a lot of people may not consider him to be right now. I mean, Ryan Bader's no joke, and that was 40 seconds. And I feel like the improvements that I've seen in Hennen Fajeda's game in the last couple of fights in particular, it gives me the confidence that he's going to be able to hold his own against much better heavyweights. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, Tom Aspinall for me is probably the best heavyweight in the world right now, outside of this conversation with these two guys. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, what happens in the gym with a training partner or something like that is not a good... I've trained with training partners that beat me up every day in the gym. And then when they get into a fight, they really, really struggle.
Yeah.
Hennen Fajeda for me seems to be an event day fighter. Right, I would imagine that he can't really let his shots go in the gym for fear of hurting yes. people, you know. Like, his takedown offense is not going to be as aggressive in the gym as it would be in a fight when, you know, when it's really on the line. So I very much feel like we can't judge people's performances based on what they do in the gym. We can only really judge them based on how they perform in the cage. And, you know, if Hennen comes through this weekend looking like a world beater, I think a lot of people are going to look at him and go, you know what? He's 6'8", he's trained at ATT, he's dangerous in striking, he's got great grappling and takedown offense since he's moved there. Like, I can make an argument for him. Mm-hmm. And you know, John Jones for me is still not a proven heavyweight. Stipe is way past his peak. I love Stipe, but he's way past his peak. So I don't even think Jones benefits a great deal from beating Stipe at this mm-hmm. point.
I agree.
The benefit from for the UFC's perspective is that the very, very casual fan still feels like Stipe is the top of the game, right? Like I was even chatting to someone in a jiu-jitsu gym the other week that asked me when Daniel Cormier is fighting again. And, you know,
yeah.
For a second, I thought to myself, man, I don't realize how far out of touch people fall with the sport mm-hmm. just in a space of a few months. So for me, like the Jones-Stipe fight, it doesn't hold a great deal of interest. Jones-Aspinall, that's the fight I want to see. And I think that determines the best heavyweight in the UFC. Yeah. I think this fight determines the best heavyweight outside of the UFC. Yeah. And I think, you know, if ever there was a day where we could see the winners of these two fights face each other, I mean, that would be a real treat for the fans.
Yeah, and I think the word you used there was, you know, an argument can be made for him. And I think if you're the PFL, that's all you can really hope for and want at this point. It's like, you know, in Bellator, when they had certain champions there, and you're like, okay, is this person better? Like, all you want is a conversation, I think, if you're in PFL spot and trying to grab up more oxygen in the room when it comes to, like, the MMA conversation, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, and I think that we've, you know, we're doing that with a few of the other divisions. I mean, I think AJ McKee and mm-hmm. Magomedov create that conversation very much.
Yep.
I think, obviously, with us having a very strong featherweight division with Pacheco and Cyborg, and the UFC not really having a featherweight division.
Yeah, that one's undeniable.
A pretty clear one. But then again, you know, I would love to see Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes back in that mix mm-hmm. at featherweight. I think Kayla's going to win the belt at bantamweight, but I don't think she's healthy at that weight.
No.
I mean, from what
the stories were concerning, yeah.
Right, that's really not good. You know, you don't want fighters to be putting themselves through that. So to reinvigorate the UFC's featherweight division and get Kayla into that division, and you know, I think then again we've got another conversation where we've got featherweights and it's comparable mm-hmm. and I do feel like the heavyweight division's there. I feel like potentially the lightweight division, you could have that conversation. You know, even the welterweight division right now in PFL and Bellator, it's a strong division, and the UFC welterweight division is made up predominantly of strikers right now mm-hmm. which kind of suits the fighters that we've got in the Bellator and PFL rosters.
Yeah.
I certainly think those conversations are on the table. I mean, I'm a former UFC, current PFL, but overall I'm an MMA guy, you know what I mean? So I'm always going to look objectively across the field and see where the good fighters are. I mean, Anatoly Malkin is a great fighter, you know what I mean? Maybe he doesn't compare with the other heavyweights, but he's a formidable fighter. Mm-hmm. There are other good guys out there that we, you know, we need to be paying attention to, but when we can have a real conversation between two fighters on one roster and two fighters on the other, and they could compete equally together, that's really where I feel like the PFL is starting to gain some ground.
Mm-hmm. And with this fight, they're introducing these super fight titles, and Peter Murray has said he wants them defended, like they're going to be, you know, company championships for the pay-per-view events. I asked Francis about this, and he was like, oh yeah, like, great idea. I think there's already people on the roster I could fight after this, maybe some people out there. I asked Peter about that. He was like, yeah, like, we had hinted that maybe something's already like kind of cooking up. Who do you see in PFL right now that could fight the winner of Ngannou versus Ferreira? I think if Ferreira wins, they probably do a rematch because that's the biggest fight you can do. But if Ngannou wins, who's the new opponent, do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously we've got the champs, the championship coming up. So we've got Popov and Goltsov fighting for the heavyweight title mm-hmm. there. I mean, that could quite easily crown one person that can step into this bracket. The other fighters floating around, the likes of Nemkov, you know, mm-hmm. like the Bellator roster brings, you know, heavyweights into this conversation. And for me, Nemkov is right at the top of that conversation. Now he's moved up in this division. You know, you've also got Moldovsky as well, who wasn't able to continue in the playoffs. But, you know, other good heavyweights that could really challenge Ngannou and also bring that striking and wrestling ability, which, you know, potentially Henan Fajeda doesn't bring that threat to Ngannou. He's a striking threat with takedown offense. Whereas, you know, you put someone in there like Oleg Popov, like he takes everybody down. He's on what, like a 19 fight win streak at the moment. If he beats Goltsov, I think he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, Goltsov is, you know, he's a veteran of the game, long in the tooth, lots of experience. He might be able to outsmart the young Fedor prospect.
What do you make of these super fight championships? Because I like the idea kind of in a vacuum, but I think PFL is slowly starting to creep towards having too many belts with all these different variations of their leagues and so many championships. And I think the hardest thing to do for a growing organization like PFL is make people care and make people think like these are have value. And if you introduce too many, who knows how that kind of skews perceptions. So what do you just make, that kind of point, these belts and how they'll fit into PFL's belt structure? And is it becoming too much?
Yeah, I to a point, I do agree with you. I do like a simple structure where you know where the belts are and you know what those belts signify. I do get that. I mean, I like the Champs v Champs belt that we did last year with the ring embedded in it. I thought that was a cool idea. And, you know, going back to like the Pride Grand Prix and stuff and the Strikeforce Grand Prix that Cormier won at heavyweight. I like the fact that we have those kind of those token celebratory belts. But I also like to define the category with which that belt's won, like an 8-man Grand Prix tournament or whatever. The champion from here versus the champion from here will have a new belt on the line. Like, those kind of things make sense. But I do think, especially as the PFL grows and as Bellator becomes more assimilated with the PFL promotion, I do feel like we're going to need to be more defined with the belts and with the stages at which you win the belts.
Yeah.
You know, Europe or MENA or Africa, whatever that regional title is, gives you the qualification to step onto the global roster and fight for a seasonal title. You see, like Henan Fajeda, for example, he's not a current PFL heavyweight champion. He was the 2023 champion.
Yes.
And I still like standing champions, right? I like the Bellator format, the UFC format, where there's a champion and they defend their belt, because then it's easier for the fans to understand who that person is and what equity they hold in that promotion. So for me, that's something that I think that we will be moving towards in the future. As of right now, you know, we don't have a belt around either of these two guys. So to have a super fight belt, because it is a super fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are two of the best heavyweights on the planet. So it makes sense for them to get a token if they win the fight. But at the same time, it can't be the Bellator belt. It can't be a PFL belt. So we have to create something new for this particular celebration.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you. In the future, I think we need to move towards more structured paths towards belts. And if you win a regional belt, that moves you to a global championship and so on. And I do like the idea of a masters division as well. I keep drilling it, keep talking about it. Cowboy wants to come back. He's 41. Yeah. He needs a masters division. You know, I saw Dana said at the press conference yesterday that he doesn't want Cowboy to fight, but I want to see Cowboy fight again. I just don't want to see him fight Chimaev.
Yeah.
Right? I don't mind Cowboy fighting Ferguson or fighting Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
I got a message from Stevie Ray straight away. Is Cowboy still on the roster?
Yeah.
Like old guys want to fight old guys, not calling Stevie Ray old.
But, sure.
You know, like veteran fighters, you know, against veteran fighters, for me, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a masters division, I think, would work well as well.
Yeah, that would be an interesting way to go. I mean, I think the early inception of Bellator almost had something like that, when we were getting, like, Tito and stuff fighting. But, I mean, I think there is room for it. And, yeah, I mean, the Cerrone thing's a whole other conversation. I hope it is not for the money, because that guy had, like, 18 bonuses, headline how many cards. If he needs money, who doesn't? I don't know. It's crazy. But anyways, just to kind of stick with this PFL side with these belts and just the promotion of this event, I'm sure you've heard like Dana putting, you know, his comments that he makes, putting the promotion down. And, you know, for someone who's trying to grow, I'm sure that makes things very difficult, because, you know, I'm sure better than anyone, once Dana says something and puts it out there, most people just take it at face value without any added, you know, context or anything like that. So how, like, much more difficult do you think this makes the growth of PFL when you have someone over there saying constantly, like, they're burning money, they're doing this, they're doing that?
I don't really think it affects us too much, to be honest. You know, anytime Dana's posed a question about the PFL or Bellator or PFLator, as he named it, which I thought was quite funny.
I actually coined that one.
He stole
it from me. When they first announced like that they were going to do the buyout, I just quote tweeted and put PFLator ? And then everyone went with it. Yeah. So anyways, go on.
It's good. It's good. It's
not even a derogatory thing. It's like that's the name if you combine them. So I like it. Anyways, go on.
Anytime Dana gets a question about the PFL and he's responding, it's positive, because conversation is happening around our promotion. Like, there are so many events around the world, and Dana doesn't get asked questions about them, right? And I'm sure that he's paying attention to, you know, the octagons and the ones and et cetera, et cetera. But he doesn't get asked questions about them. So that means that we're closing that gap a little bit, right? And at the same time, you know, just like we have Peter Murray and Don Davis on our side, Dana on his side, they do what they need to for their promotions, right? So Dana is always going to be UFC centric. What are those guys doing, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if we go back into the UFC's history, we can find times when the UFC was burning money, when the UFC didn't look like it was going to succeed, when the Ultimate Fighter saved the promotion. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why, you know, Griffin and Bonner were held in such high regard, because if it wasn't for them, we might not be sitting here having this conversation at all, because the UFC may not have continued.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all promotions have an ebb and a flow. They go up and down, and you know, usually they go up and down before they start to really streak. And yep. the UFC's fortunate they've been around long enough, they're on that streak now. And that's why we're all, you know, we're all watching them lead the market. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have other competitors coming up. And from the PFL's perspective, I'm watching as well as all these other organizations are popping up and these guys are doing interesting things and these guys have got loads of money and these guys have got interesting investors. There's lots and lots of things going on in the sport. So it's a vibrant time. It's a time to be excited if you're an MMA fan.
Yeah. And I guess just last thing before I let you go, because there's a whole room of people waiting downstairs to speak with you as well about this event. How important is Saturday, though, to everything you just said there, the growth? Like, I'll be honest, I think like it's been a little bit of struggles early on in this merger. We've seen a couple of Bellator events postponed, like some of the cards maybe haven't delivered the fights they want. Do you think Saturday is really important to deliver like the best product, the good fights be good, all that stuff to close this year with everyone looking at PFL in a positive light?
I do, absolutely. I mean, yeah. And this is, you know, this is a fantastic card that we've put together. Yes. And I know it does still kind of confuse the products with Bellator and the PFL, but like the reality is like, The Bellator had a roster full of fantastic fighters, but the model, the business model, wasn't working, and it's still not really working very well this year, right? What we need to do is to restructure that, integrate it better, and make sure that all these fighters are part of the same roster. And I think we're moving in that direction. Like Eblen Fabian fighting for a title on this event kind of merges the two promotions together again, but. Mm-hmm. I like the cleanliness. I like the simplicity of it. And I like to make sure that everyone knows what these belts are and what they represent. So I think in the next 12 months, we're going to see some big changes there.
Very interesting. All right, Dan. Well, I appreciate you joining the bonfire and chatting a little bit about this. You'll be calling the fights with Randy Couture, Sean O'Connell on Saturday. So looking forward to that. And we'll take a break and we'll come back with Oscar Willis to talk about his bare knuckle boxing win. We're back here on the bonfire with the first ever two-time guest on the podcast now. Three episodes, two appearances. Look who it is. It's BKFC fighter and winner, Oscar Willis. What's up, man?
Two-time fighter winner.
Yeah.
Two-time award nominated journalist of the year. Two-time guest on this podcast.
There you go.
It's like my number 12 is two.
And this is your second time in Riyadh, right?
Nah, I've been to rehab a few times.
Oh, yeah. Yes, because you were here for the other boxing fights that don't involve MMA fighters. So you're
yeah,
quite
yeah,
comfortable
yeah.
here.
I've been to a couple of Fury fights, yeah.
Yeah. So how are you feeling, man? It's been a couple of days since the fight. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about the card, but this is about you and
about
what
this
you
card?
Did.
It's, it's been an interesting... it's obviously been an interesting few days.
Yeah.
I'm on a bit of a come down since the fight in more ways than one. Yeah. But it's funny, like after my first fight, I was like bouncing off the walls. And then after this one, I kind of just was a lot more chill and I don't really know why. And then on the flight here, I was like, oh, maybe I was just too big for him and I'm just a big weight bully and it wasn't really a good performance. And I'm a loser and I suck and I need to do it again.
No.
So I don't know quite what I'm thinking, but I'm going to give myself time to process it. But I'll say... on Saturday, I was never doing it again.
Yeah.
And what day is it today? And now I'm like, I need to find something to do. Like, I don't know if it's going to be BKC again, but it could be. If there's, I need to find like another thing.
Power slaps available.
That's like the logical next progression, I feel. And it's like the one I have left, but I don't know if that's like where
yeah,
I want to go,
can you not? I mean, I was worried, as a friend, I was a little worried about you just competing in the sport in general, not about like the fight. I was confident in you.
Thanks,
tweeted
mate.
Out before I thought you'd do it. I don't know. Say you're a weight bully. Did you feel like, I mean, obviously height wise, you're not bigger than him, but.
No, but he told me, so the press conference was on Thursday. And at that point I was already like cutting weight.
Yeah.
May I be honest and say being the grumpiest bitch on this planet.
I want to ask more about that because when we spoke last week, you're like, oh, this will be easy. I think you said you were 13 over at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, go on.
No, so by that point on the press conference there, he was saying like, oh, I was actually like looking at maybe we could have made this featherweight. Mm-hmm. And he's like been walking around at 152. So when he said that, and I was like, well, I've been walking around heavier than that.
Maybe it would have been good for you. I don't know about for you.
Well, I wouldn't have made featherweight. I could never have made featherweight. Yeah. But I was just like, wow, he's been walking around a lot lighter than I am. But I was like, so he's not really lightweight. So I knew I was going to be bigger. But I didn't rehydrate as much as you'd think. I got like, so I weighed in 154. Mm-hmm. And I got in the ring at 162. So it's not like a crazy rehydration, but I'm still 10 pounds heavier than him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel like the biggest issue Ben had, and like, because obviously I was very aggressive and he couldn't keep me off him, was just he didn't have enough power to like stop me. Like there's a couple of times because my fighting style is hands down, chin up, spam the X button.
Yeah.
Just that.
It doesn't work against me in UFC, but it works in person, apparently.
It's the same tactic, just uppercut punch, uppercut punch. But if he had more power, it would have wobbled me back and got him some breathing space, you mm-hmm. know. So I think that was his biggest issue. So that makes me kind of feel like a bit bad about it. But yeah,
I mean, he signed the contract, so
yeah, yeah true. Yeah.
Against this guy, don't want to do that. When you did the fight, obviously 4 knockdowns in 1 round, it was pretty fucking dope to watch that.
Yeah.
Did you know after the first one, like, I got him here? Or were you, what was the mental battle? Or were you just running on autopilot in there?
Yeah, you just let the instincts take over.
All your years of training, just...
No, yeah. It was like, I got in the ring, and I remember being like, okay, just like, Dan was really on my ass about like breath. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, deep breath. And I felt my like right leg like shaking like crazy. I was like, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
And then we got in the center, and I was sort of, my plan was to let him show me what he was going to do, because I didn't mind 30 seconds to get into things. So I was like, well, I'll just follow him. But then as soon as he jabbed me, I was like, bah, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And I knew, it's like I didn't feel it, but I heard the right hand I landed hit him. Mm-hmm. I heard the slap of the skin, and then I could see him wince. And then it's just like, we're just punching, you know? So in terms of the knockdowns, I thought the first one was decent. The second one, he kind of fell over. Blow mm-hmm. kind of pushed him over. And then after the fourth one, I looked at David Feldman like, this guy's getting hurt in here.
Yeah,
actually, I was like, I just wanted to end the fight. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, because I could tell on his face that he was not like hurt, like in terms of like concussive pain. I don't think he just looked like he was
shocked,
being hurt, but not. I don't think at no point did I look at his eyes and go, "This guy's not hit."
Right. Yeah. Did that go like perfect? You said you were on the flight out there. You were writing your will and everything. Like, best case,
you were
thinking of every worst case scenario. When you were thinking of every best case scenario, besides like maybe putting him out cold with the very first punch, like could you imagine the experience being better? You got the multiple knockdowns. You got almost a full round. Like watching, I was like, that couldn't have gone better for Oscar.
Honestly, if I felt like it was going to look like that. Whichever one of us won, I knew it was going to be like a frantic pace for the first 2 minutes, and I knew probably one of us was going to get knocked out. It would be like a TKO finish rather than an out-call finish. That is actually pretty much how I imagined it would go. Was it basically that like I would be too strong or hit harder than him and he wouldn't keep up? Everyone kept telling me he'd go down once and then pussy out. So every time he kept getting up, I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, give Bed the Band his credit.
I'm very proud of that guy. Like, he deserves a lot, I think. I think he's like, people underestimate that he's got balls of steel, you know? Because mm-hmm. also, everyone was giving me credit for having balls of steel. Realistically, I know Connor. Seeing Connor at ringside is not a massive trip for me.
Right.
Fucking is with Ben. Trust me, Ben was like, yo!
Yeah. So,
and, you know, I've got Dan in my corner. Like, Dan's not staring me out all week. He was staring them out all week.
Right.
I think it was bigger for Ben than it was for me, probably. So he deserves like his own credit too. Mm-hmm. He's cool.
How helpful was it having Dan Hooker there? Like, do you feel like the experience would have been different if you had had maybe just like a normal coach, someone who isn't obviously his stature?
It's not necessarily his stature, but
just
his
experience, your guys' relationship, all those things.
His ability to read what I need,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to manage. You know, I think if you're like a guy I've been training with for maybe a few weeks, you would let me be frantic and bouncing off the walls and like dancing around. And he was just like, sit the fuck down and like constantly on my case about stuff. And he's just very good at not telling you what he's like. The way he behaves and acts forces you to act the same way as him, right? If mm-hmm. he's sitting there just like that and not talking to you and giving you one word answers, you end up sitting there in the same space. And that's how he's making you conserve energy, you know? So having him slapping orange juice out of my hand when I wanted to have a little drink of it, which I thought was really unfair, you know, stuff like that. Everything, like if you eat it, if you have it, and then but he also knows when not to bully you. So mm-hmm. he pointed this out after I'd made weight, but I guess I know this is to do in the sauna. He said I was flopping around like a baby in a crib, like, like rolling around.
Yeah.
It was so horrible. And he just was looking at me like, okay. And then the next
day, it's a new experience for you. He sees people cutting weight every single week, like people who do this for their livelihood. It's not a normal activity to be cutting weight. So I think your reaction is probably the more human one.
And he was just like, never seen anything like it. So yeah. So, but obviously having him there was a massive help. And just in terms of like a friendly thing for him to do, like to travel that way was meant a lot. But it gives you a good amount of pressure, right, having that. You don't want someone to fly the furthest they can and then get fucked up, you know. Yeah. That was, I will say, I don't think he was particularly impressed with my reaction to his coaching. I just ignored everything he said. Like, before we get out, he was like, right, he's like, we're going to work the jab. So then I'd like hit mitts. He's like, work the jab, jab to the body, jab to the head. And I just said, I'm not going to do any of this. And then in the fight, when I got the second knockdown, I heard Dan, because he said, you will hear me. Mm-hmm. I will make myself heard. And I was like, slow the fuck down. And yeah. I was like, no.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the jabs there. It seems like, you know, Ben was trying to jab a little bit, and I think I saw from the brief analysis, the high level analysis need to do of this fight, being like throwing a jab to BKFC seems like a pretty wasted effort or motion, because unless you have like real power, it's like a, you know, high level jab. It doesn't seem to really do too much to stop people.
I think because there's no real guard, you can get countered off a jab so much easier.
Yeah,
right. That's what happened to it. So he threw the jab, and because his hand's like even halfway out, there's nothing to even, can't parry it in time or anything like that. So I think if you jab, it's basically a power punch sport. Yeah. I think if you jab, if you're a very good boxer, and if the other guy's playing your game, if the other guy's willing to like, okay, we'll trade jabs, then I could see a jab fight. But if one of them, because the ring's so small as well, if one of them's just, that's why I tried to avoid watching BKFC highlights before it, because I was like, I don't need to see. You know,
we have a photo gallery on MMA Junkie, the bloodiest BKFC fights.
Yeah, I didn't tune in.
Take a skim through that.
Didn't tune into that, but I did notice that a lot of successful attacks in BKFC are done off blitzes, like DDP style blitzes. So I think if you're trying to jab and the other guy is going to blitz, you run out of room too quickly for you to really keep them off effectively. So I think BKFC is not really a jab heavy sport. No, it's more of a windmill in. Close your eyes and hope for it.
What it seems to be. What's You promoted the fight amazingly, and you know, we saw all the people who shouted you out. The Dana thing kind of really took it over the top, got you on the main card.
Which blew my mind, bro. Like, it's all worked out, but him being like, so it's on Saturday, 10 a.m.
Yeah.
YouTube. I was like, oh,
that would have been home better,
run. Yeah. And then they were like, yeah, we moved you to the main card. I said, no, move me back then.
Oh,
and
you tried to fight against it.
I tried to fight. Yeah. I said, that's mental. It's gone a viral clip with the world's most famous promoter, or if not one of them, you know, saying it specifically, promoting it. And then let's say if he tunes in and watches it, he's likely going to react to it. I said, let's use that. I guess we did too good a job of promoting it. They wanted us on the main card. So I fought with that for a couple of days. Then it looked like they moved us back. But because basically what happened was, because it was such a last minute decision to move us to the main card, it was like half the organization hadn't heard it yet.
Okay.
So
they're doing putting up promotional stuff.
So all the bout sheets had us as the first fight of the night, but then we were being told, no, you're the fifth fight of the night. Then we get to the arena and they're running through, you know, the pre-roll, like taping, and we're the first graphic and stuff. Like, so I was on fight night. I was like, when are we fighting? Yeah. When are we fighting? So that was a little stressful, but I think it worked out. I don't think the DAZN barrier was as big an issue as I thought it was for like my friends and family to watch it. It seems like everyone was able to figure it out, you know?
Yeah. Did they cut you anything a little extra for any of that?
I don't know. I haven't been paid yet. Okay. I heard Connor shout the word bonus. Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad he didn't say double money for you guys.
I enjoyed Feldman's face after that, though.
Yeah. He was horrified. That might be coming directly out of Connor's bank account for those.
But, yeah.
What about after? The pre-fight stuff was cool. I know Dana reacted to it again after Contender Series, gave you a little shout. But like privately or anything like that, was there something that was special to you? Someone who reached out besides me?
Of course. honestly, you notice who doesn't reach out. I'll say that. But we'll get into that maybe off camera.
Okay.
Like Israel, obviously, has been a big supporter of me, and he was great. I was like talking to him like, hey man, like you've manifested things and now I feel like I've done it. Yeah. And then Dan spent the next 24 hours ripping the piss out of me for using the word manifest. He was like, oh, I thought of something cool to do and I did it. Oh, I was like, okay. So, but that was a cool moment with Israel. And then Michael Chandler hit and sent me a voice note.
Nice.
I was in the car. It was, I think we were quite far into proceedings at that point. So I was kind of like, am I hallucinating
this? Was it motivational and inspirational?
He said
would it have been better before the fight?
I can tell you how he ended the message. I bet you can guess. See you at the top. He said, God bless, see you at the top. And I was, it was me and Dan in the car listening to it on the way back from the arena. And he was like, you know, well done. God bless. See you at the top. And both Dan and I said it along with him. When he God bless, we're like, see you at the top. We were like enjoying that. So that was cool. And yeah, the like having a little chat with Connor was pretty cool. And mm-hmm. So post-fight was pretty decent.
What did he say to you in the ring, Connor, when he like first came in?
When he got in, so he grabbed me and went, good performance. Then he grabbed Ben and mm-hmm. he pulled us in. And he said, you're both warriors. You both get to speak on this game now in ways that others don't. Mm-hmm. And he said, just great work, great fans, great work, stuff like that.
Do you feel like you can speak on the game differently? What can you say right now that I can't?
I don't think I can speak on like bare knuckle necessarily, but maybe I do think there's some value in realizing what it's like to experience a fight week with the nerves just slowly progressing, mm-hmm. with the weight cut sapping you and just sort of riding the emotions of, or controlling your emotions of the week. There's definitely something to that I can feel like I can relate to now. Because as Dan said, for what Ben and I's skill and experience level is, who's had a bigger platform than that? It comparably, obviously Jake Paul maybe.
Yeah.
Jake Paul and KSI. But other than that, like I think it was a wild experience where we were, the crowd, the Gladiator Coliseum, Conor McGregor's there. It's on DAZN. I think comparably, you'd be hard pressed to find. I mean, there's probably a few, but realistically, we should be in an empty bingo hall, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I got experience of understanding what it's like to feel the stakes are real high, mm-hmm. you know? So I probably learned a bit from that.
Is that maybe the trickiest part of this debate of doing something again? That's going to be bigger than that. I really don't know. I mean, like, you could maybe take on a more, not to disrespect Ben, like a more legitimate or whatever opponent that could maybe make it bigger. But in terms of like the timing, the location, Connor there, all these Dana, you know, you might not have him in a contender series where you're going to get a pre-fight and a post-fight.
Even the only reason it was worth reacting to for these people is because it was a one-off.
Yeah.
If I do it twice, then it's like, oh, Oscar does BKFC now. Yeah. Right, there's no point in talking about it or anything. Yeah. So you're not going to get those little virality moments. So then it's like, okay, well, maybe location then. So obviously Dan and I have agreed if they do BKFC Amsterdam, we will fight on that.
I'll be there for that one.
Like, get your arms twisted, you know.
So I might not be present when I'm watching but
I'll be physically
I'll be there.
But so I don't know. I think realistically there's not really gonna be anything that you could put on my table that's gonna feel like it'll top it. So I imagine I'll get over this little weird lull at the moment, but yeah, I don't know.
How was the post fight? Is it tough right now coming into Saudi Arabia where they do not sell liquor anywhere?
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Past couple of days have been a bit of a blur.
I think, I think the last day was Monday. We were there, Dan and I flew out Tuesday, and I think we stopped speaking around 3 or 4.
Okay, yeah. And then to each other or just in general?
And then I think around, it was about 9. Dan said, I think we went too deep. And I said, I think we may have to. So it was, but you know, it wasn't like as crazy as all that, really. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, we've been out.
Yep. Celebrations. Leave it there. Speaking of the viral moments, and just, I guess, one of the last things stemming from your experience, since Dan was there with you, it seems like you almost kind of had a hand in nearly making a fight. I don't know, Dan Hooker versus Conor McGregor. You spent time around both of them. Do you think this happens?
I think both of them are on board. It's up to the UFC now.
Yeah.
That's the party line. Okay. Yeah, that was cool too. Like, it's, I wanted them to meet, you know, because they're like sort of both friends of mine, right? And I know Connor Connor is sort of understandably wary about guys coming to his stuff, because then he's going to think, like, is this guy going to try and fight?
You know, right. Dan came with the right intentions.
Yeah, so yeah. Dan was very cool. I think Dan, you know, I think he appreciated that Dan came to basically support his business in the BKFC. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I think they may have shared a forged or two.
Yeah.
There was a little couple of beers going off there. And yeah, I think they, I was surprised that Dana was so receptive to it. You know, Dana's, oh, I love that fight. I was like, oh. So.
I mean, how could you not? What do you do if that fight's happened? Do you just watch
fucking
through your fingers?
Cry? I don't know what.
Double knockout, draw.
I don't know what I would do. I'd hope. I almost don't want it to happen, but I want Dan to get his payday and I want Connor to get back in there. So,
yeah.
That'd be a pretty miserable fight night.
It would be interesting. I guess before I let you go, we are here in Riyadh, PFL.
Yeah.
Battle of the Giants. There's a media day coming up. I don't know what's your... I think we'll be bluntly honest. We're mainly here because they intelligently scheduled this the week before UFC 308. So it'll be pretty much most of the media here, or at least us two, Jose Youngs from MMA Fighting, will be going from here to Abu Dhabi for 308. So smart move on PFL.
Brett is as well. Coverage. Brett's doing two weeks of work.
Brett Okamoto.
Two weeks.
Maybe we'll get him next week on the bonfire to see what it's like just working.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Brett. We love you.
Brett, remember these?
But yeah, being here now, I mean, I'm excited to see Francis Ngannou back in MMA. Cyborg versus Pacheco, I think, is about as high level as you can get for women's MMA, whether you're a fan or not. McKee and Paul Hughes is fun. I don't know what's like. I know it's probably weird kind of coming into something like this after what you just went through last week, but I don't know, interest level, excitement level.
No one's going to believe... Our personal circle is probably not going to believe this. I'm probably more excited for Cyborg and Pacheco than I am for Ngannou.
Mm. Wow.
I don't... There is just... Francis is a victim of... the step down in notoriety from the UFC to PFL is what it is. Mm-hmm. You can't deny it. And it's a bit like when Demetrius left the UFC and went to ONE. Like, you don't realize the power of the being in the UFC until you leave, I think. Or until... they leave and you realize how much less you just are inclined to cover them and all that sort of stuff, right? So I think Francis is suffering a bit of that, combined with the rise of Aspinall. You know, when Francis left, it was, John and Francis, they should have fought. Mm-hmm. We never know who's the best. And then Tom came along and blew past a lot of people that now it's him and John and Francis is sort of shoved to the side. I was even talking to Tom about that where I said, man, he left the UFC and everyone forgot about him. You know, realistically, this should be a three-way conversation about who's the best. Is it John? Because he's the, you know, undisputed. You got Francis, who never lost it. And now you got Tom, who's the interim. Mm-hmm. That should be the conversation. But I feel like Francis has been shoved to the side. If he gets a really great knockout, maybe that conversation starts happening again.
Yep.
But I also think that the Francis narrative is somewhat played out now as well. I think when he left, the beef between him and the UFC made sense. I think especially because Francis was so vocal about it, as was the UFC. Now it feels like that beef is being pushed more by the people at PFL, maybe, or certainly
and
Don
yeah,
Davis.
Media too. I think, has, of course, because there's nothing else.
But
to
even
ask.
Like when Dana said about the purse and stuff like that,
yeah,
our numbers didn't go through the roof. It didn't seem like people really give a shit. So, so that being said, I am curious about the fight because I don't feel like Francis has been training MMA for a while, you know, a considerable amount. And at some point, Francis's athleticism is gonna decrease past the where his opponent is. So I think it's a tricky fight, and it would be the most MMA thing for him to lose.
Yeah, it really would.
I'm kind of curious how that's going
to
go.
Yeah, PFL needs him to win, in my opinion. Because
I said what would be really funny is if he comes out and he's just a grinding wrestler.
I mean, got to do what you got to do, I guess. I mean, if he does that off the knee surgery, too. We haven't seen him shoot a takedown or anything like that. But yeah, I think this is a super important night for PFL. This merger, I think, with Bellator has not gone very smoothly in the eyes of the fans or seeming like business-wise. They're canceling Bellator shows, things like that. So I don't know, if I said to you right now, what's the PFL fight of the year or the moment of the year they've had so far? You'd probably have to actually think about it. Whereas if I asked you for UFC, you could probably name 10.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
They need something good in terms of the fights.
They also
to
need
be
to,
good,
I feel
to
like
highlight
they
something.
They
need something. In my
they
opinion.
Need to figure out a bit of a strategy.
Yeah.
It seems a lot like there's a lot of money being thrown at the wall here, and I don't know necessarily the value in it. We spoke about this, but when they had Jake Paul come and host the press conference, I kept saying to you, follow, give me the logic.
Mm-hmm.
If Jake Paul's entire shtick is built on the fact MMA fans hate him, why are they going to tune in to watch him host a press conference?
Yeah.
It didn't seem much. It seemed to me like people recognize Jake Paul and go, okay, well, that makes sense. We'll use him.
Yeah.
So they need to kind of, I think, maybe start strategizing on what way to spend their money and when is it worth doing a massive production for ceremonial wins if 10,000 people are watching, or do we spend that elsewhere, you know?
Yeah.
I think they need to look at strategies like that. And then in terms of the promos, Kayla Harrison's the best and she fucking sucks. Yeah. We've seen that tried and tested and it's never really worked. It's something, I guess, but I don't know if it's the, I don't know.
No, it's, I mean, dude, we've covered too many UFC events to count at this point. They're just entire process is so seamless. They know what they're doing, and like simple things, other promotions, I've noticed this many times, but like, we're going to go to Media Day shortly here. They don't even have an audio box set up. Like, there's different things that, like, you know, were years ago. And again, not trying to hate we're here. Like, I appreciate being here to cover this event. But yeah, they have work to do. And I think, you know, this is part of it. They need Saturday to go well, in my opinion, or like this year is going to feel real flat for them.
Well, and then long term, disastrous, I feel, you know, maybe they just have to slip something in old mate's water before he fights Francis.
I think it'll be good, dude. You put Francis Ngannou and Hendon Ferrer in a cage, I have a hard time envisioning that not being anything but an explosive knockout.
It's going to be great, and I think Cyborg will be great too. But then it's like, she hates the fucking lot of them, you know? So it's I noticed in our media day schedule, you know, now her media day interview's kind of up in the air.
It's not
because she's got flight issues, I would imagine, you know?
No, work to do, but hey, this is what we do. We come here as media, we document it, and we see the growth of the promotion, all that stuff, and you're back on the media side. So I hope you enjoy the return to reality, I guess. All right, Oscar. Guests on the show are now 2-0 in their fights. You won and Kayla Harrison won. So we're on a roll here.
It's the Bond rub.
We'll see.
Which you usually have to pay for.
There you go. That's a great way to close it. Appreciate Oscar and Dan Hardy joining the show. Appreciate everyone tuning in. And we'll be back next week from Abu Dhabi, UFC 308 Fight Week. Appreciate everyone tuning in.